see you coming back in here with duckie jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
It's All-Ireland final week. Dublin are going for four in a row. Tyrone looking for their fourth All-Ireland this century. So what better place to listen to a preview of the game than on the so-called weaker podcast, the podcast that concentrates on the weaker counties here. Balls.ie's weekly GEA show with me, Mick McCarthy, with Mark Farrelly.
How you doing?
How are you?
Don't know much about Dublin and Tyrone, not going to lie.
No.
If this was Waterford against Leitrim, I'd be much more have a better worded on it.
Maurice Brosnan also with us.
How's Trix says?
Maurice, if we maybe radical suggestion here, divided the championship in two, had the B championship with a good better name than B as the All Ireland final, as a double All Ireland final, with this being the first one as opposed to even calling it a curtain raiser, we could have an amazing game between Longford and Sligo to look forward to this weekend instead of this bloody Tyrone Dublin nonsense.
Gaelic football mightn't even set out a game if we had an A and a B versus whatever happened in those semi-finals.
Well, this final will sell out, surely.
Oh, it has to. If it doesn't, that is the reckoning.
It'll be sold out. And
will everyone show up is the question.
That's because the good question.
The tickets go out,
because
obviously
there's never been tickets available officially for an All-Ireland final beforehand, but I've been at like some of the Kilkenny Tip games in the hurling and stuff like that. It was supposedly all the tickets were sold, but when the attendance comes up, it might be like 81-1 instead of the 82-5, or as I said last week, full houses, which is now the official name for the full house attendance.
Attendance is full house.
Full house. That was the official number. But yeah, so that'd be interesting to me. Will everybody go to this game?
I think there's sufficient intrigue. Given the downbeat nature, I still think it could be, like, I still think there's enough in it just for people to come out, but for an All-Ireland final, surely.
Surely. It's an All-Ireland final. They don't come around that often. Once a year, in fact. But look, we're going to, it is a little bit of a downbeat prelude to the All-Ireland final, but we're here to tell you why you should be excited about it. So we're going to have lots to talk about. One is, Dublin are going for four in a row. They've never done that before in the modern era, at least. I'm not sure if they did it back in the 1900s or anything like that, but Dublin haven't done that before. It's a new achievement for them. Thrown back at the big game for the first time in a while. They've been progressing for a couple of years. This is the natural next step for them. There is actually lots to talk about. We'll get into the ins and outs of the game. I'm also delighted to say that we have a special guest in studio today who is Rob Carroll of Gaelic Stats. He's been providing stats to us all year that we've been talking about on the show, with thanks to Shore, official statistics partner of the GAA. But we're going to have him in studio and talk to him a little bit about the whole business of GEA stats. So I'm really looking forward to that and talk a little bit about the stats in the game. We're going to get Mark's take and Morris's take on how Tyrone can do this. We're going to look at both teams and see whether any Tyrone people could possibly get into the Dublin team. And we're going to have a little bit of an All-Ireland final quiz for you two boys. I was well beaten in the hurling one a couple of weeks ago.
Well beaten,
in fairness.
I don't know why I'm browbeating straight away when I'm probably going to get hammered today.
This is what I'm going to say. There's a sense, and I don't necessarily buy into it, but a sense of foregone conclusion about this game. So I'm going to do a special quiz on the lesser celebrated defeated All-Ireland finalists.
Oh,
so
God.
We're going to look back at the last three decades and do a few questions on the feat of the All-Ireland finalists in All-Ireland finals. So look forward to that, boys. Before we get to Rob, who'll be in studio in just a couple of minutes, there's some big, big news in the GEA world. Jim McGuinness could be on his way to a very special job. Morris?
Yeah, look, this year hasn't gone according to plan, and they're in the news all week. I know there's a kind of an air of negativity around it, and maybe certain elements of the house that aren't in order, but Jim McGuinness is the right man for Manchester United. It's what they need. Time to move on from this Mayo carry-on. I saw a tweet from the Connacht Telegraph today that Jim McGuinness has indicated he's not interested in Gaelic football, but association football.
Association.
Which is a word that's criminally underused with regards to football.
Why is Jim McGuinness the right man for the Man United job?
What this team is lacking is like any sort of kind of cohesion or unity, and that's what he breeds. Like, if anything you hear about this Donegal team is what he Greaton Spays. They've got a manager right now who's not very charismatic anymore. McGuinness still holds that. You see that from his Sky Sports work. It's just logical.
Yeah, it's logical, aside from the fact that there's no basis tactically for it, or there's no proof that he can do that.
You didn't watch his Beijing team.
The most highest paid players in the world.
But sure, look, wouldn't it be a bit of crack?
There's a difference between getting a couple of lads from Kilcar and Godore and all of these places singing at the same hymn sheet.
How do you know?
Compared to trying to unite Paul Pogba and Alexis Sanchez because one's pissed off that the other's getting $100,000.
I'll ask you a very simple question. Would you like to watch Manchester United against Spurs with Pogba, Lukaku, all 11 players inside their own box and breaking 90 miles an hour up the field to score a goal? Yes or no?
Yes, or no. But would it happen? I don't know.
Lukaku, I'll tell you, wouldn't have missed that chance last night if McGuinness was the manager. You didn't see Colin McFadden missing them. Look, there is an actual GA job they could be taking, which could be a little bit more glamorous than Manchester United. A little bit more chance of finishing second.
The Offaly job's gone. John Mahan's after taking it.
Well, I was going to talk about the Offaly job, given the show that we're on. Paul Rouse was a very interesting choice. John Mahan, kind of not that interesting as his replacement.
I don't know. He's going to have shorts on in the middle of December. It's going to be great.
He will. Going to be up. Very high shorts. The thing about John Mahan shorts that I always find is that they're not actually the shortest shorts in the world. But
he wears
there's an awful lot of leg on show. So it's a high waistband plus very, very long legs.
He balled it well.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you with the shorts. He had a bit of hair and he was come bald, didn't suit him, and then he shaved the hair and he went grey. Silver fox with a shaved head. He looks a lot younger now than he looked 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Honestly.
One, the tan helps them for sure, right? Do you not find that men who lose their hair wear it better if they've got a lot of hair in the rest of their body?
Maybe. But you chat away about that and I'll just find a photo of him here.
I was wondering why he was on his phone.
To the benefit of their podcast listeners.
What do you think, first of all, Jim McGuinness, or the possibility of Jim McGuinness going to Mayo? Look, it's not a foregone conclusion. There are other people.
Okay. I found it. Right. We'll put it up and we'll tweet it out. There's John Mahan in 1995 or something like that.
Looks about 60, like.
Yeah. Right.
Probably about 35.
Here's John Mahan now.
But the difference is he just embraced it.
He's also he seems like stockier, is he? Has he gone to the gym, bitch?
So he has been managing, I suppose, in that photo. In this other photo, he's in the middle of managing, I think. I don't know whether that was Mayo or Roscommon, who's manager at the time, but he looks failed.
I'll tell you, John Martin in 1992, which is unbelievably 26 years ago, won a Munster title with Clare. And that should never be forgotten, Mark.
Yeah, geez, that is a long time ago.
26 years ago, managing Intercounty.
He's going yesterday.
He's
now one of the first managers to have managed a county in every province in Ireland now as well. Now that he's taken over Offaly. He's had Roscommon, Fermanagh, Clare, and Mayo, Fermanagh, Clare.
When they get into the game, they put out their list of desires and wants so they can tick off their achievements. Say, I want to manage in every province.
I don't know, maybe.
Hardly. I want to look well when I shave my hair. Jim McGuinness to Mayo, Morris, yes or no?
I think it'd be a good idea. I kind of think it might not happen. We spoke to him earlier this year for a Sky Sports thing and he was saying that the way he spoke that day, he's definitely got interest in football, association football, as opposed to Gaelic football, and he's 46. Most people are starting managerial careers in football a lot younger. So if that's a genuine aspiration, he's going to have to get started soon.
Don't tell John Mahan.
Oh, I'm not in Gaelic football. He can always come back to that.
Oh, sorry, in soccer. Okay.
But we need to start using association.
Don't tell Roy Hodgson.
Like what Mayo needs is somebody who's going to maximise what they have to the best of their ability. Like it's a percent that they're looking for. And McGuinness has demonstrated that he has the capability to do that. Like that's there's a lot of kind of guff about what he did to football and the kind of the legacy. Like ultimately, he got the most out of that Donegal team that he possibly could. And if you could do similar with Mayo, they would win an All-Ireland. I don't think he will get it. I think there's a lot of grounds for the sport for James Horan to come back in. But I think McGuinness wouldn't be a bad appointment.
Yeah. What about Kevin McStay? Didn't get it last time. I think there was a sense of, I'll never go for it again after what happened last time. But
yeah, I don't know if he'd be tempted back in. I don't know.
It's his choice, though.
McGuinness definitely seems like he's still going to stick with the soccer. I know he also talked about, it was rumoured with the Cavan job, but it seemed to be that he wasn't interested in any Gaelic football managerial role. So I wouldn't hold out hope. I wouldn't be putting any money
like
on it.
The problem for the Mayo County Board is that there's no standout candidate. Like, Soylent is the under 21 manager, but it's still very young, and that's kind of might go against them. Whatever happened with the proposed Breffni duo, you've got two selectors there that Rochford proposed. They're still there, but you don't know if that's going to go through. Horan, I don't know if you remember, South 14, he slammed the county board after he left over there. Failure to back him with the Gaelic grounds. The Newbridge or nowhere is in my head for some reason, but it was when the
Park or nowhere.
When it wasn't playing Croke Park, he gave it to Mayo News and was really kind of heavy about the lack of backing from the Mayo County Board, which I don't think would be an organisation to forget that. And then you've got somebody like McGuinness and the baggage that might bring in terms of what side of football they're going to play.
What do we think of Rochford going?
I'm sad for him. I think his legacy is going to be slightly misinterpreted because of we were speaking about this off air, Mick, about the Clark Henley incident, and which was just so massive and glaring. But ultimately, he got this Mayo team as close to probably the best team ever as anyone ever has, and he's also gotten them as close to an Ireland win as any of the managers has in 60 years. Like, I'm sad for him in terms of, I think his legacy might be misremembered.
Yeah, possibly. Two All-Ireland finals by a point.
Tony McEntee, any shout for him to take the managerial role?
I think the previous Mayo players have spoken very highly of that the whole selectors they had that have now departed. Like, Donny Buckley was incredibly popular amongst a lot of those players. I know Lee Keegan kind of credited him with this change in Mayo tackling that we now know they're renowned for, but supposedly down to Buckley.
Is anyone good enough for the Mayo players?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what maybe you would need is a star-studded team who would break that team down and kind of like ultimately build it up again his way. But yeah. I don't see that happening. I do think it's a really attractive job right now. Like, purely based off, this is a team coming off a break, which they haven't had in a while. But that hunger is still evidently there. You've heard, like, Andy Moran was speaking earlier this month about how his body has never felt better. We don't even know if he's going to carry on next year. But that's a sentiment that is you come across in a lot of Mayo players' interviews recently. Like, I think it's, despite all this baggage that there evidently is, it's a really attractive position still.
It's All-Ireland final week, unless you have anything to add there, Mark.
Nope.
No, it's All-Ireland final week, and yet Mayo have commandeered the first half of this podcast. So that's just... I think commandeered needs to be in relation to a vehicle or something, or a moving object. So maybe I've misused that, but I'm going to stick with it.
We did a thing years ago. Oh, it was like the GA released some plan for like 20 years or something. Vision for 2020 or some of them big plan things. And we were talking about what up for the match would look like come 2042 or something like that. I don't know what it was. We were saying there'd be some diplomatic incident between...
Dez and Grania.
Between, Palestine/Israel and Ireland, because some Mayo fan would have painted Mayo for Sam across the West Bank. And I was reminded of that when I saw this Paul Fitzpatrick tweet out the weekend. Well, no matter where you go, there's always some who are in a Mayo jersey with the Pope was signing the Mayo jersey. It's like they have a way of just creeping into the conversation no matter what.
Well, and they've crept bloody well into the conversation on this show in this week in general, and I'm sure come Sunday they'll find a way to make themselves the centre of the story again. And sure, look, isn't it great that they have the interest and the passion and the commitment? But look, we'll move on because there are two teams that are actually in an All-Ireland final. Dublin going for four in a row. Tyrone looking to get back for the first time since 2008. We're going to talk about the match in detail with the two lads in a few minutes. But up next, we're going to talk in studio with Rob Carroll from Gaelic Stats to go through some of the stats of the All-Ireland.
I would love it if Cork beat them. Yeah. Also, can we talk about the fact that when I was walking out to stand, one of them turned to the other one. Ashford, it's great to be back in Division 1.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that.
Let Cork beat them. And Came from a Tipperary goal.
But I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title.
And I'll tell you now, they're still fighting for this title. And they've got to go Cork and get something.
And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something.
I think they're at home against Cork.
We just say things like that.
They're at home against Cork there.
And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I would love it if Cork beat them.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Now, as you know, we've been getting stats from Shore, official statistics partner of the GEA, all year on the podcast, and I'm delighted for our All-Ireland Final special to have the man who's been behind most of those stats, Rob Carroll from Gaelic Stats, in studio with us. How you doing, Rob?
Good. Thank you very much for having me.
No, thanks for coming in. Now, we've been fascinated by some of the stats that you've been sending us all year, and as I said, like, sometimes I'm like, you must be just like weirded out by some of the I'll come up with the weirdest idea of why I think a game might have been won, and I'll ask for the thing, and then you'll just come back like a half an hour later with, oh yeah, here's the stats for that. I'll talk to you about the specific stats for the game in a few minutes, but I'm just fascinated to know how this whole business of stats in Gaelic football and hurling has grown in just the last couple of years, really, and how much it's become a part of the game and a part of the analysis of the game.
Yeah, like it's completely changed. I suppose I started almost straight out of college in the area. That was around 2004, 2005 sort of thing. And at that stage, you had to sit inter-county managers down and explain what analysis was and why you'd video a game, why you'd even look for stats, where now you'd, you know, be hard pressed. They're having rows over how many stats people are allowed in the press box or on the bus or whatever it is. So it's completely changed in sort of 10, 12 years, almost entirely different.
Yeah. And how much of your work then, would be, you know, to provide stats for teams, you know, to analyze their own teams and their own work and their training and their methods, rather than to just have them out there as part of the overall analysis of the game, maybe from the media?
Yeah, so definitely something I did much more. I was involved with Ciara Magini's Kildare team for a few seasons and did it obviously at that level for one team. And then I've done a few other teams since, a few other inter-county teams since. It's a little bit harder with the churn of managers and everything like that to always keep that continuity. But there are definitely teams that are in touch fairly regularly. I wouldn't be the day-to-day analyst, but they'd come to me for answers to certain questions or certain problems, or how do X team do it differently and what might we learn. So a little bit more of a consulting role than a day-to-day role with teams at the moment.
It's funny, you know, on that point, I'm always curious about how much the teams actually base their game plan off the stats or the feedback they're only getting. Like, we've seen this year, for example, this massive the obsession with, like, you see it a lot in McGuinness's column or elsewhere, is this turnovers and the Dublin's adaption so that they massively decrease the turnovers that they give a team. Like, when you watch this iteration of Dublin, how much of that would you put down to the stats, the feedback they've gotten, and them adapting to it?
Yeah, I think it can't be underestimated how much of it goes on. Not all of it is positive, I would say. Like, sometimes you can interpret the stats and do something that maybe is not the best way. One of the things I was really conscious of when I did some of my early teams is you just analyze your own team and who they played. And when I started to take a bigger picture look at, right, what's every team doing? So what's the standard across the board? And I don't think there are many teams that do that enough, purely because of the time that's involved. But I think rightly or wrongly, for better or for worse, I think it definitely has driven changes in the game. I think where you see teams shoot from, there's a famous basketball sort of academic paper. It launched a guy's career over in the States. In terms of, he was an academic, he wrote this paper, published it, didn't think much of it, and within a few weeks he was hired by a club. And that's changed, you know, if you look at two-point throws and three-point throws in basketball, how much that's changed over the last 5 or 10 years. It's almost a different game. And then interestingly, I saw Jim McGuinness deliver a presentation to the pro-licensed soccer coaches here for the FAI, and one of the slides was from that paper. So there was a guy looking around for different ideas, and I think those sort of things definitely influence the game more than maybe people think.
Yeah, like, see, that is interesting, because that's the... like last year we saw, for example, the Houston Rockets became the first team to shoot more 3 points than they did 2 points. So because they start to see the value of a three versus a long point two when you've got pressure. And what we've seen in Gaelic football is the opposite of that. Like, you've got one of the stats that I think is most interesting here is that Dublin have worked 86% of their shots this year inside the D compared to even Tyrone, which is 76%. Like, it paints a picture of a game that is absolutely about maximizing your use of possession and then trying to move the ball inside. Like, there's very little that what you talk about, that trend in terms of long range shooting, it's nearly the opposite in Gaelic football.
Yeah, yeah, no, because the value in, obviously, in basketball is you get an extra for trying something difficult. Where obviously in football it's entirely different, and I think teams have looked at the percentages. Like, it still shocks me. You ask an intercounty manager or any player at a game, like, what's an average sort of shots scoring rate? Like, what percentage do players score? The answer is invariably somewhere between 60% and 80% is what you get back, but the reality is much closer to 50%.
Okay.
So even the value that the managers think a shot is worth, it's only, you need two to score basically across the game, give or take obviously certain factors, but across the game, where that's changed. And I think teams are adapting. Like, that one you pick out is an obvious one from a Dublin point of view, is that, okay, they don't maybe play the same caliber teams that Tyrone have, but they're definitely trying to work on something where they know what the percentage of every 5 yards makes to their shot.
Would you have, like, in terms of, we saw, for example, the Limerick team had set targets on their wall for stats. This is the, like, they had set puck up percentages that they wanted to win, and also on the opposite side they'd set goal targets, and then these were all plastered up on the wall, these were set goals. Like, I'm speaking generally here, not about any teams you've worked with. Were there teams that would, like, chase certain conversion numbers or even just numbers in general when they go into games?
Yeah, definitely. They would. I would say the majority have targets in mind.
Any example?
Yeah, well, like, I suppose mainly you're looking, they'd be looking around the kickouts and the shot.
Yeah.
Once they'd be the main ones, and then you'd, turnovers would be another big one. Even though the number is quite low, like, the number of turnovers in a game is relatively low, but teams would still be looking. Like, I know James Horan and Mayo at times would have had a number for turnovers from his front line, from his forward line.
Yeah.
So even being that specific to say, look, we're looking for this number, but from this unit of the team as well. So yeah, they would all have those sort of targets going into the game.
In terms of your own, so you're doing this work and you're looking at it. When you see, so one of the things you sent into us, or what you guys sent into us earlier in the year, was about the percentage of sideline cuts that are attempted for scores. And the percentage is really low. And one of the things I was saying here is, if this was an out the field shot and it was a 20% or 18% shot chance or whatever it was, managers would be going absolutely mad at them going for it. But you know the stats, and that's kind of what you look at in the game. Does it just annoy you to see when, like, obviously managers and teams are getting better at it and they're adapting more, but when you just see, like, That's a stupid tactic. Why are you doing this? Does that annoy you as a stats person?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Yeah, there's things that just drive you absolutely mad because you just know the value of something. Like, one I always do is, like, committing a foul. Now, okay, sometimes people won't like me here saying this, but sometimes you do need to commit a foul. But to commit a foul, let's say inside 35 meters, is almost a guaranteed score against.
Yeah.
A shot from in that sort of range is give or take maybe 50, 60% score. So there's an edge. You're nearly better off letting him shoot.
Yeah.
Than fouling. Because fouling, you're almost guaranteeing a point. So there's one that stands out to me where that discipline, you just need to be, teams need to be way better than they were. And I think it was Mayo last year, there are three games going into the All-Ireland final. They'd given away 10, 11 and 10 scorable fouls in the previous three games. I think it was last season or season before. And you're just looking at that going, when you go to play Dublin, you've just handed them 10 points. So you're starting 10 points down. You're not going to get those 10 frees back at the other end.
Yeah.
So there's one.
And especially as Dublin free conversion is the best in the country, which is one of the ones that we talked about. Looking at this week's game and the stats that you've sent us, just searching through to see, you know, where's the bit that if Tyrone have the advantage that they can, you know, they can exploit this and that can be the centre point of the game. Tyrone don't have any advantages in any in many of the stats anyway.
Well definitely if they're giving away to Dean Rock sort of 10 or 11 scores, I think you can forget about it. You know, that's one obvious. Now, Tyrone are obviously a very defensive team, very good team from a defensive point of view, but that's one that would stand out where if it's anywhere, if that number starts to creep up and how it's refereed and all that type of stuff, it's just going to be impossible to get those 10 plus scores down the other end.
So how much would that come into, like, someone like Mickey Hart's thinking now? Like, would that's that's obviously a, kind of these stats are would implement, like they would integrate those into their game plan, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No, they'll know like that. Their target will be like 4 for the entire game or something around. It'll be as low as possible is what they'll be aiming for within that area. Fouls out the field, fouls anywhere else, I think they'll be okay with. But those ones within Rock's range, which at the moment is anywhere inside the 45, I think every single one of them will hurt Tyrone.
Do you still encounter much misuse of stats? Like the one that we were talking about this year was Jermaine O'Connor's GPS score when he hit over 14K and people were talking that. Whereas we recently spoke to Conor Nash in the AFL, who is never told his GPS score, but has always told his high end speed and his inclines and declines and the kind of the massive difference between what they value versus what it seems like we value.
Yeah, so there's a difference between what's entertaining and what's useful.
Okay, yeah.
And that's, I suppose, where the mix between the media is interested in how far somebody's run. And that infiltrates then, you know, down into the game or coaches who consume the game through media and then go back to their team and they look, oh, how far did you run? Because yeah, he ran, yeah, whatever. But it takes a little bit of time, but eventually this does get weeded out where it comes back down to saying, well, actually, what's important? Just because we have it doesn't make it important. And stats have gone through a very similar process, the same. Like, for me, counting possessions of players is one of the most futile exercises you can do.
Yeah,
I mean, if you play in midfield, you're going to have more possessions than if you play full back and so on. And okay, there might be some ranges, but it's one of the things I hated when managers would turn around and say, well, how many possessions did he have? And I'm sort of like, well, who cares?
Yeah, I keep meaning to get to these specific stats of the game. You keep saying things that are interesting to me. I read in every piece of journalistic analysis, and that may be people using like their own stats or maybe it's yours and then interpreting in their own ways, but possessions is a huge thing in that, and it's often something that I've wondered about. And Marisol always talked about Shawnee Johnson for Cavendish, the role he plays, he's obviously going to get possessions, they're not doing anything with it. Journalists misuse stats as well to a huge degree, don't they?
I think everyone does to an extent. You tend to use what's easy to collect first, so you pick off those low-hanging ones like possession, like team possession, you know, 55% of what, you know, that still hangs around, it's still been there forever. It has to be one of the most useless stats of all time. Like, all it tells you is that Team X had the ball more than Team Y, but who cares? Again, like, if you know, if you watch Spurs Man U last night, you know, exactly the same thing. You know, it's just it's so irrelevant over the course of a season. Okay, it might be interesting the odd time it's like 90% Arsenal, 10% Burnley, but outside of that, it's not really useful. And they keep those simple ones to collect always pop up in media circles, I suppose.
Let's get to Sunday then, right? So I'm looking here. Scores, we have Dublin with an advantage, 28.1 points to 22. Dublin have taken 78% of their scores that come from play towards 72% of thrown. There's more there that Dublin all lead on. Kickouts, Dublin kickout retention, 86% to thrown, 78%. That's a big stat. There's more in there. Defensive stat, Dublin on top. Place ball conversion, Dublin on top. From play conversion, Dublin on top. The only thing I can see with Tyrone having any advantage of here is turnovers in the tackle. Is there any stat that jumped out at you while compiling these that would say that if the day goes very well for Tyrone in this regard, or what type of match it has for it to be close or for them to have a chance to win?
Yeah, I think, you know, you've heard a lot of talk about Tyrone's free taking, and it hasn't been where it's needed to be, but it's not a million miles off where Dublin's has been. Mm. So, like, it's relatively even in there. I think.
So sometimes you're looking for, like, the gap being smaller than perceived rather than who's leading it.
Yeah, because, like, obviously on a given day, this is a one-off. It lashes rain on Sunday and this becomes a different game. And so I'm never wedded, like, absolutely to what that number is. It's more to give you a feel of where it's at, and like that, where it doesn't quite agree with the consensus or it might be off with what's been talked about. So Tyrone aren't a million miles away in that. And I think if they can win that battle where they maybe get more frees than they concede, well, you know, you'll go through a list, those four or five sort of key metrics, and you're just trying to win each one by the smallest of margin. So if they can, you know, end up Rock kicks three or four frees and they kick four or five, then they've tipped that balance a little bit in their favour. I think obviously the kickouts is one that's talked about all the time in terms of Cluxton. The one I always like is how well Dublin do on the other end. Mm. So how well they play opposition kickouts. And you can see that they've won nearly a third, so one in every three of the opposition kickouts this season. And again, that'll be one where Tyrone will be looking to not be anywhere near that number. They'll have to get the ball and keep the ball whenever they have it. Because if they just keep coughing up chances to Dublin, Dublin will happily pass it around. They'll happily be patient. They've learned to do that. We've seen them just keep ball for minutes and minutes on end. So I think when Niall Morgan has that ball at his feet, I think not losing one in three is going to be a big factor there.
To what extent will that influence in-game management? Like at halftime, I assume stats are incorporated into the team talks and that. Like what significance would they place on it, those instant turnover ones?
In the kickouts and...
Or even just in general, like when you're presumably you're getting staff feedback at halftime. Does that influence anything?
Yeah, I think it'll definitely give them a feel for where they are. Like, again, you're dealing with some of the best managers and coaches in the game. So often you're confirming what they already know. Yeah. Like sometimes, again, the perception might be, you know, they might lose three kickouts on the bounce and, you know, the manager is thinking, and he might need to make a change here. And you're walking in saying, well, they're the only three we lost that just happened to be all together. Like, I think that's happened Cluxton a few times. It's whenever he does lose one, he tends to lose two or three in a row and everyone is calling it a meltdown when his numbers are still way ahead of everyone else. So sometimes it's just to check that. But these are experienced managers. They're going to have a good idea where the game's sort of going in their favour from that point of view.
Can I ask something to the top of my head now? And you might not remember that, and it's totally fine. But it's just, we're talking about kickouts here, and it's something we were talking about yesterday. With the Clark Henley thing from a couple of years ago, which was this perceived crazy decision that, you know, possibly cost Mayo and All Ireland, etc., etc. I'm interested, did the stats back that decision up, as far as you remember?
Obviously you're fooled to say yes, considering how the game
before the final, I suppose.
I thought it was really brave, to be totally honest. I was in Crow Park that morning. I thought it was a really brave decision. The easiest thing in the world was just to stick with the plan or stick with what was there. I can't remember from memory, but I definitely know the following year, could have been a league game or might have been the championship game, and Clark had an absolute nightmare in the first half of the next Dublin Mayo game. Mm. And I just thought it was interesting that we didn't know how Clark would have played in that final. We don't know what Dublin would have done to those kickouts, but he doesn't have the best kick out, and Mayo didn't have an out ball where they could just chip it to somebody and get it done. So I can't remember the stats off the top of my head, but I obviously, it didn't turn out well.
You weren't horrified by it.
My point of view, I could understand the logic. Yeah, I thought really it was really brave, but I could definitely understand the logic of why you did it. Now, there's a million other reasons why you mightn't do it.
Yeah.
But I do remember, it was a couple of months later, obviously, that next Mayo-Dublin game, I said it could have been a league game. And I just thought Clark had a nightmare first half. Now, it all got sorted and fixed at halftime, but I just thought that could have been the All-Ireland final and lost in a totally different way, and nobody would have said anything. So it is really brave to do it.
Yeah. As we can always turn things back to Mayo anyway, no matter whether they're in there.
They're always in the news.
So before we go, I'm asking Rob, the fan, or Rob, the stats man, do Tyrone have any chance?
It's hard, obviously, looking at the numbers to see it, but Dublin haven't blitzed an All Ireland final, really. Like, they're a superb team, and you know, four in a row is going to be unbelievable if they do it. But you look back at the individual results in finals. Rock had a bit of a wobble in one of the drawn ones. They've won a couple of them by 1 point, or you know, Kerry was 3 points. So they haven't blitzed a team in the All Ireland final. They're well capable of doing it. Total leg on my face, they go and win by 10 or 12. But I see it being a kick of the ball. So within three, but probably Dublin definitely. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, Rob Carroll from Gaelic Stats, thanks so much for coming into the studio. And thanks as well to Shore, official statistics partner of the GEA.
Thank you.
A case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful.
This is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
The decision
that is disgraceful.
This is all wrong. This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Mark, welcome back. We had to kick you out so Rob could take your seat there. But very interesting stuff from Rob. But I breezed through some of the stats there because I just wanted to get to kind of more general points. But some of the stats that he did give us for the All-Ireland final, and I just want you to know, to tell me, and Morris as well, which of these kind of interest you more or stop me at any point. So in terms of scores, Dublin have averaged 28.1 points per game this season, which, by the way, is a huge number, isn't it? Like, I mean, I'm looking at, I can't tell you is what I was looking at because it'll interfere with the quiz earlier, but let's just say scoring used to be a lot lower. Tyrone have averaged 22, which again isn't bad, but we're talking like 6.1 points a game difference, like, you know, possibly easier schedule for Dublin. I'm talking like an NFL person here, an easier schedule. 78% of Dublin scores this season have come from play, while 72% of Tyrone's points have come from play. Grand, another advantage from Dublin. Overall shot efficiency for Dublin has been 64% compared to 59% for Tyrone. That's a big stat, isn't it? Yeah. Shot efficiency. Like, that's more like what it comes from play. Like, if you're knocking over all your frees, it doesn't really matter, you know, but shot efficiency is a big, big difference. 64% is a huge number there as well. Interestingly, Dublin have worked 86% of their shots this season inside the D compared to 76% of Tyrone's shots. Morris mentioned that during the interview. That's fascinating.
Like that. Yeah. Well, that's the. I think if there was one stat, like, and Rob, like, I know Rob actually just said that this is something kind of adverse to you, but if there was one stat you wanted to pick out to kind of emphasize this iteration of Dublin and what they prioritize, is the fact that 86% of their shots come within the D. Like, this is a team totally adverse to taking any risks, and every way they play is designed to implement.
It's funny because I was reading these stats before we went on to the podcast as well, and it was the one that stood out to me because I can remember at the time when you were like, and you know, like chatting about football back in the mid-2000s, and Mickey Hart was the person who seemed to be credited with this, bringing in the idea of only taking shots when it's around that score and D, of always holding on to the ball and working it to the point. Now, I'd say, but back then, holding on to the ball meant, you know, maybe not necessarily going for some spectacular shot around the sideline if it didn't work out for you first time when you were in the full forward line or something. You know, like, it wasn't holding on for a few minutes or whatever. But it was to that degree that it was like he was allowed to, no, actually, let's not shoot. Let's not shoot from outside the 45 or go for outside of the right boot, you know, points. It was, let's work it in and get it into the scoring zone. And now Dublin are out Tyrone.
Yeah. Yeah, like Tyrone are still a big number there, 76%, but like Dublin.
I know football's also evolved is a big difference. To the point where you've had to shoot from further out to overcome the blanket defence. But yeah. I mean, Dublin have faced blanket defences probably nearly more than anybody, and they're just still getting right in
the
score.
And Dublin, you, like, in 2014, if I don't remember the first half there, like Jim McConnelly hit two screamers from well outside the 45. But yeah. Then in the second half, when you're way more tired, that kind of massive shot, like that output, is just no longer possible. Like, it's way harder to convert that. Whereas now, what they would do in hindsight, he wouldn't have taken that shot and let it drop short. They would keep ball and like will your opposition into submission.
But it's funny because we are talking about some of the best shooters in the country. It's not as if they don't have it. They're good enough to make sure that they don't take the risk. You know, so like, and then you go to their score, shot efficiency, and that's why it's higher, is because of the inside the D. But when the Dublin team came through, at first, like 2010, 2011, when we kind of first got to, they, like, that was what was so thrilling about them. Bernard Brogan kicking points up into the air from under the Cusack stand into the hill end, you know what I mean? And Connolly doing the same thing. And that was just what made that team a little bit magic. And they don't need to do it anymore. So they can still do it if they want.
It's interesting that they managed to get Mannion, Rock, and another, depending on whoever's in the full forward line, into the game so much as well, given that they don't kick the ball in.
Yeah.
That it's all hand passed across the 45 or ran across the 45. And like their ability to get them into the game, even when matched for blanket defences, is like how they manage to free them up, because it's not usually they free up a full forward, like someone in the full forward line, it's early ball in before the defence has a chance to set up, but they're still getting on the end of moves whilst coming up against whatever amount of players in the 45.
Kickouts that Rob said, and we did touch on this already as well, is that Dublin's kickout retention is 86%, huge number. Tyrone 78%. That's kind of not too far off what the shots inside the D stats are on that game. They also edge, and Rob talked about how important this is. This is probably the most important stat of them all. Dublin edge winning opposition kickouts, 32% of kickouts compared to Tyrone's 24%. So that's massive. Pushing up, making sure, disrupting the other team's kickouts. And then you get those turnovers there. That's a lot more likely to be a score than just winning your own, the 86% of your own kickout. So Cluxton, the best of all time at that, and probably not going anywhere soon. What can Tyrone do from their side? I think one of the big questions we'll know very early on in this game, whether Tyrone are in with a shot or not, by you know, where Morgan's kickouts are going, I guess. Defensive stat. Dublin have conceded an average of 15.1 points per game this season, considering we talked about that they'd scored how many? 28.1. So they're an average win of 13 points. Dublin have conceded an average of 15.1 points per game this season, and 75% of those scores have been from play. Tyrone have conceded an average of 16.3 points. Not too far off. And 62% of those have been from play. So Tyrone giving away a little bit more, a few more frees, but not conceding all that much to Dublin, and probably having played tougher teams.
Yeah.
Really. They've played extra time a couple of times. They've played
week on week coming through the qualifiers. They've
played week on week, you know, so their legs would be gone a little bit, and just they're not conceding all that much, you know. So that's one
the thing that struck me with all these stats going through was that Tyrone's, bar maybe the kick out winning opposition kickouts, they're all really, really good stats.
Tyrone about
they're all exceptional. Yeah, except that Dublin beat them in every single one of them.
Yeah, every single one except for one, which we'll get to in a sec. But Dublin have converted 80% of their place balls this season, which I think is down a little bit from when we did that stat earlier in the year. And I know Rock has, you know, he hasn't been as clinical, I suppose, in the latter stages of the championship, but we'll see how it goes on Sunday. 74% of Tyrone's, again, not that massive a gap as Rob talked about. From play shot conversion, Dublin 61% of Tyrone's 55. 61's really, really good stat for that, from in play shot conversion. Turnovers in the tackle, here we go. Tyrone have performed better in the turnovers this season, having won 52 turnovers in contact compared to Dublin's 24.
I've 5.8
to 3.4 game. I know what you're going to say.
What? Go on.
No. Dublin always have the ball. So
there is that, but also the fact I just noticed as a trend throughout, when we'd be looking at stats and you're trying to think, you know, they sure release the stats for every game as a part of these most important. You always hear about turnovers are so important, and turnovers are so important in these games. And there was an awful lot of them where Dublin weren't winning the turnover battle.
Yeah.
And there is a thing of, like, is it just because they have the ball so often? I presume it is.
It might be. I can't imagine that turnovers aren't a huge stat. They're so dangerous, and they're as we were talked about, was it James Horan Rob was talking about, is like they looked at it as such an important stat for their own team, mainly because of this is whether we're doing the right things. How many times do you not get a turnover, but you've put the right pressure on and the forwards have done the right thing to get the job?
But
so
there's also the
sign of attitude.
Yeah, there's also, though, like, and this is, I don't have stats to back this up, but only just memory, and it could be misplaced memory, but Dublin are a lot more defensive in terms of getting people back rather than, you know, they don't press as much, trying to turn you over in your own defence, which some other teams would do, like they'll get around you. And also they tend to just kind of almost bore you into submission when they're defending, then the players will take stupid shots from bad areas and the ball will go wide.
It's not a turnover, but it is.
Yeah. Like, you think of the Galway game, and many times Galway turned the ball over by kicking the ball up in the air and it going out over the end line, or
50 yards away from the goal. Like, it's a style of play thing, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, actually. They don't
pressurise the ball as much.
And it's a symptom of the way Dublin play. Like, I think a low turnover, like, what Dublin do so well is they starve opposition teams of turnovers in the fact that they don't ever really engage you when they're attacking with the ball. Like, they will stand off to wander over and back. They, like, until the gap is clearly there, then they will take it. But very rarely afford you the opportunity to get a turnover. Whereas team like Tyrone, like, think about the teams they played this year. Monaghan, the amount of turnovers in that game, the amount of times you could see players like running straight into a body of like three or four Tyrone players, and then oftentimes it's some Michael McKernan gets a hand in, knocks it away, and that's their break. Like, the Tyrone have played that kind of game where they prioritize that as a launch pad. Is this thing is like, if you're coming down our throat, we're going to swallow you up and we'll fly right back.
The final stat then is similar to this, is that in terms of lost turnovers, the two teams are the same, which means that Tyrone are less per game because obviously they've played more games. Which so just there is, I know it's a style of play thing. I know there's Dublin have possession more, and I know there's sometimes the virtual turnover that won't be in the stat, but there is an opportunity for Tyrone in the tackle somewhere, and it might be just that they have to look for somewhere to attack Dublin, and maybe attacking them in possession, you know, in the forwards and pressing them a little bit is one of the ways in which they can do it, of which we'll talk a little bit more in a second, and we're going to pick what we think is the best combined team. Well, what Morris and Mark think is the best combined team of Tyrone and Dublin.
You were fucked over the line twice. Fucked over the line like you would catch a fucking loaf of bread and fucked you over the line with his shorts up. And what that does is, it lifts the opposition. We don't want to see no Westmeath man fucked about. Is that clear now, Alan? No more!
Right, guys, this is an easy one. Can a Tyrone player get... Would a Tyrone player, any Tyrone player, get into the Dublin starting 15? Look, you're probably talking about a panel, you know, 25 players that would tend to be used over games. You're probably talking about 7 or 8, like there's a big number there. But who would actually go into the starting 15?
Yeah, one unnamed dub in the office claimed that no Tyrone player would get into a combined Tyrone Dublin team.
This is a proper dub now, not like me.
Yeah. This is a proper, no, it's not you, Mick.
Who?
This is a proper guy who knows shit.
Likes Dublin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it hard to argue too much of him. I think Peter Hart would get in there. I think he might have to play in wing half forward.
Instead of like Niall Scully?
Yeah, and that's Hart and Scully as well. Yeah. But like Peter Hart, when he was on form, was one of the best. Like he was, like up until the semi-final last year, he was arguably player of the year.
But you have to, you do.
Yeah, like maybe someone in the full back line.
Well, hold on, let's just go through. Instead of just saying where he goes or who, so we're saying Niall Scully or whatever. So he's not going in instead of Kilkenny, O'Callaghan.
Rock.
Rock Mannion are both definitely in the full forward line. And then Kilkenny and O'Callaghan can kind of interchange. And Scully's probably on the other
Brian
wing.
Howard.
That's and Brian Howard then as well, right? So that's where we're looking as the six Dublin forwards that will almost definitely start on Sunday. We think. We've got others that could knock around. Like Kevin McMenamin's still always a possibility. But I don't know. Like, I mean, so Peter Hart, we're saying the wing back for Tyrone is the only possible forward.
We're not saying that. No, I'm saying that. Scully maybe... No, not Scully, I'm saying Slodden. Slodden maybe.
These are good players.
Like. Yeah.
Like, see, that is the key. That is actually the key point here. Like, what you need to do in an argument like this is you need to differentiate between Dublin, the team, as in a unit, and Dublin, the players. Because as a team and a unit, they're awesome. It's impossible to pick holes in them. But there are certain players in that unit who have underperformed. But because as a cohesion, as a team, and athletically, it can compensate for them. But there's individual players. Like Johnny Cooper, for example. I think, personally, Michael McKernan has a better year than Johnny Cooper. Kurt McKernan, who kept Mannion scoreless from play the last time these two teams played each other, and has scored, like, he scored 1-6 from play as a cornerback this year. Like, Michael... Yeah. But the problem...
And Keno Sullivan as well, like, if you didn't want to drop Matt, like, yeah, you know, Keno,
that, like the two players who, like, I personally think Parik Hamsi could go in fullback, the job he did in McManus. Like this thing about Mannion playing with a sweep or Tyrone playing with a sweeper, I was in the hill for that game. There was so much of it when Hamsi was one-on-one with McManus. It was a one-on-one battle. Now Hamsi did nothing else other than mark McManus, but he took him out of the game. His one sole job that he did effectively, and he's brilliant under a high ball, which is like supposed weakness of this, you know, this Dublin fullback line potentially. Like the problem is that, like, we would make the case you could bring Hamsi in as a fullback instead of Keane Sullivan, but Dublin went the case, well, we have Fitzsimon, so we don't like the you're talking about like these layers of depth that they have,
and also the fact that like McCarron or somebody that you suggest is like nobody, like, he's not a household name, so you're never going to put him in.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Like that is, we do a post in here, the rolling all-stars, and recently we had Chris Crummy in it right up until the last week with player, and I was kind of noticing like a general like negative reaction to Chris Comey, like, why, how could you possibly have this guy in the team? And then it kind of slowly dawned on me, these people actually don't know who Chris Comey is. Like, Chris Comey was man of the match twice this year, scored four points in a relegation decider for Dublin, was easily Dublin's best player, had four great games, which should be enough to get an loss there. But people genuinely don't know, like, they don't remember the Leinster Championship, they don't know who this is. And the same thing applies to McKernan. Like, I guarantee you, a lot of people don't know who Michael McKernan is.
All right, I've got a slightly separate point, but it's definitely related.
Okay.
This is the reason Dublin have just won the last three All-Irelands.
Yeah.
And we're talking, and I know it's a hypothetical, but it's almost like, why is it? These Tyrone players aren't proven. They had their chance against Dublin last year, and they didn't show up. They were a little bit better in the Super 8s game in Omagh this year, but still ultimately lost. Kind of didn't really show their hand until the last 5 minutes of that game and look good. We need to see this team prove it. Go out against these players, against these proven players, before you can say, right, they're not famous, they're not that known, that's fine, that doesn't make them lesser footballers, but there also is a reason that they're not famous and not known.
Yeah, that's
and
fair enough.
And it's because they haven't done it on the big stage yet, you know, and this Tyrone team have lost two games this year. Dublin haven't lost any. Dublin haven't lost a game since 2014, you know, and that's in Championship, never mind them any Tyrone loss in the league, you know.
Yeah.
And one of those was to Dublin, and I kind of feel that until, like, honestly, you guys know more about it. Mickey Hart and Jim Gavin know more about it. But if I'm picking that team, I'm probably picking 15 Dublin players.
And that's fair enough. But I do think a certain element of that is down to that thing of taking it as a team versus breaking it down into individuals. Because as a team, Dublin have been so much more awesome. And as a team, Tyrone haven't been. Yeah. But I think Michael McCarron has hardly put a foot wrong. Like, he's 20 years old. What he's done this year is remarkable. I know I'm probably overplaying this point, but I'm just as an individual player, one-off player, based off form, I do think he,
And he's also someone that hasn't had a chance to do what I'm saying, because if he's only 20, he's not exactly, he hasn't been in the position to prove it over the last three or four
Brian
years.
Yeah, Brian Howard's, come good, he's instantly hit the heights this year.
Yeah.
So, but because he's in the Dublin team, we're Brian Howard has to be in the scene.
Yeah.
Because it's just got more spotlight on him.
Exactly, yeah.
And also the fact he's not a cornerback.
Actually, he could play anywhere, Brian Howard.
They never get the respect to deserve the cornerbacks.
So
we've agreed that this is a pointless exercise.
It is a pointless exercise.
We've just wasted the last 10 minutes.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out any way that I can get excited about this. And one of those is, I think what we've done through this exercise is find a couple of Tyrone players that we're going to be watching quite closely at the weekend. And they are
Cullen Kavanagh. The players that I think would push this dumb team close is Cullen Kavanagh, McKernan. I'll start in order. McKernan, cornerback, Hampsey, fullback, Cullen Kavanagh. Maybe as
I was going to put Cullen Kavanagh in. I was like, you can't put him in midfield, because midfield definitely has to be James McCarthy and Brian Fenton. And then you want to put him as a sweeper. Like, you could argue who's a better sweeper, Keenan Sullivan or Colin Kavanagh, but even then it's hard to you have to be a proper GA nerd with proper aerial footage and everything to decide which lad not touching the ball did a better job of not touching the ball but not letting others touch it as a sweeper than the other. So you might have to pick him as the wing forward and bring him back as the sweeper, and Peter Hart gets left out.
So
Conor Callaghan as well.
Conor Callaghan is in contention. I think Trinity McCann, the year he's had, is in contention. Nice sudden. And then I actually don't think Peter Hart has had that good a year, but he was brilliant in the semi-final.
Just as a footballer.
The thing about the semi-final is he wasn't even that great until the last 10 minutes, and then he won the game for them.
Trinity McCann?
That's a sign of the star.
Massive this year. But again, you're talking about Trinity McCann comes in and then
Jack McCaffrey. Maybe not. Right, okay. Well, maybe for John Small. I don't know. My head is absolutely wrecked from this. Who's going to win the All Ireland? And by how much?
Dublin by I'll end up having negatives. I think less than 5, maybe.
Even though we're not doing Guess the Handicap this week, he says the exact same thing I was going to say. I think it'll be closer than people let on. I would be interested. I think there is a very big argument, apart from the fact I don't understand how they're going to win it, but there is a big argument that in support of Jim McGuinness, with his theory of putting 50 men behind the ball and refusing to try and win the ball back.
Why?
Because it's exactly as I said about Dublin, where they're like, we'll bore you into submission, we'll go and kick a stupid point, and no one's actually, we haven't seen someone be patient enough for Dublin to see if they'll actually try that.
No, you can't, sorry, this is important, I wanted to move on. You can't bore this Dublin team. They're too patient, they're too talented, they're too good at holding on to the ball, and then they're too good at shooting when they get the chance to, right? I don't think you can defend them into submission. I think all you're doing then is giving them the ball, calming things down, making sure that they're in a comfortable position where they'll always have a 3-4 point lead. I think what you can do is attack them, and I think that Galway did it a little bit in the first half. They couldn't sustain it. That is where Tyrone have been at their best this year. You see Tyrone in the last 15 minutes, like Meath, how long ago was that game? And we thought that it meant nothing, you know, it was like we didn't think Tyrone were going anywhere. But if you actually look at what they did in extra time, the speed at which they attacked, there's nobody in the world that can handle that. And they showed it when they did it against Dublin the last few minutes when they emptied the bench as well. Dublin couldn't really handle it. That is how you do it. I mean, there's no point in just sitting back not doing anything. They'll never score.
Well, that's what I was saying originally, but the problem is I don't know how they're going to win it by doing that, like getting scoring more than Dublin.
Because they lose 9 points to 4.
Hold on now, hold on a second. Because it's not like we're going to just put every man behind the ball and then not try and attack. I just meant they might need something else or a layer on top of that. Even on top of the speed of Tyrone attacks. For the speed of Tyrone attacks, generally they originate from Tyrone winning the ball back in their own defence or the whole team going forward together.
That's
so
fine.
So bring all 15 men behind the ball, which is what I had the idea was on about,
you were talking
and then attacking a pace when you have the ball. But I just meant as a defensive system, when you don't have the ball, of not losing patience, going out and doing exactly what Dublin wants you to do, which is getting pulled out of position in your zonal defence and then giving them a handy score. You can still bomb forward and try and get them on the counter-attack, and that's where they might be able to outscore them. And it doesn't mean that they can't do exactly what you were talking about.
How deep are you talking?
McGuinness proposed inside the 45, because they don't shoot from outside the D, so it's the thing. Mark, Lawrence of Arabia.
Christ's sake, I thought you would say Lawrence Riley, better known as Larry.
Do you know who Lawrence of Arabia is?
Yeah, yes.
Lawrence of Arabia led the...
Is he in for the Mayo job?
Lawrence of Arabia is... As an example, David Goliath. David and Goliath is a book by Malcolm Gladwell, and
but how David should have bet Goliath.
It's also a story from the Bible, isn't it?
Goliath was is the actual the underdog of the book.
So in this book, he talks about how massive underdogs can overcome huge disadvantages, and one of them he proposes is Lawrence of Arabia. So that what he was talking about is how if you look at the standard warfare, when very big countries fight very small countries, about 70% of the time, the bigger country wins. But when the smaller country does something radical, like off the wall, crazy, like the Vietnamese in the girls, or Lawrence of Arabia against the Ottoman
Empire. Michael Collins.
When they do something
he has to go up,
crazy,
oh, Lawrence of Arabia, such a hipster fucking choice. We just went up the hill.
Sure, everyone knows the Irish invented guerrilla warfare.
They win 65% of the time. And that same premise applies to basketball or applies to people with dyslexia or applies to... Like, it's the same idea. It's that what it takes is to do something totally radical, which is why there's something in this idea of going totally off the wall, bringing off 15 players back, because that's ultimately what you have to do against a team who are as big...
No, and bring on gorillas.
No. This is exactly the point. This is what everybody does. And it's not successful for anyone.
Nobody has gone... Do you know what? If you want the ball, just keep it. Someone will always go, to hell with this. I'm going to try and win it back at them. Or I'm going to, they haven't just gone, here, look, it's grand. Like, just do whatever you want.
God, I can't wait for this match.
It's the premise of what we're talking about. It's this idea that if Dublin recycle possession until they get a chance to kick from inside the D, 86% of their shots come from inside the D. What Mark is proposing is that you don't let them inside the D.
How come the radical idea is always negative? Is always let's be as boring as possible.
Another idea I had was...
I agree with that. So we pitched this idea as in what we're doing. My idea was the opposite of what Mark is...
Actually, peck off. That was my idea.
15 men inside the Dublin Fort.
What did I say to you yesterday?
I don't know.
Before Morris steals it. But I said, why don't Tyrone just try it, or someone try a 5-man full forward line and see what happens?
You said it to Morris.
I said it to him.
None of what he said is true.
He did say it.
But no, what I think they should do, when you see this Dublin team's like reluctance on how quickly they ring the ball, these like McCarthy, that kind of area, like this, their half-back line of McCaffrey, McCarthy, these kind of, I think Tyrone need to overload that area of the pitch. So if you were to play like a 3-4-man midfield line, and then the similar in your half-forward line, when you overload that middle line and just congest that area of the field, so you don't let them transition the ball, that's where you press. So then you become
and then
like...
you move with them
exactly.
Back. I'm not saying let's stay forward. You move with them back. You don't let them have the run of the field.
Why Tyrone can sustain that as opposed to other teams? Another team that could sustain that is Mayo, because they have the athleticism. Like we're not talking about tactically. We're just talking about physical ability. And this Tyrone team would demonstrate they have that. Now, the problem is that fatigue because of the amount of games they played, but they have the ability to implement that.
They absolutely do, and this is a really good point, because Dublin's basis of their attack is McCaffrey are one of them forward. Bursting at speed, so and then everything there, slows down once they get up there. You stop them doing that. Trust your backs. That's what Mayo did. You're telling me how good the Tyrone backs are the one for one-on-ones. Trust them for the one-on-ones. And then when Dublin go forward and they get forward at a slower pace, you go back with them and you can flood the defence then.
Yeah, that, the only worry with that is that I have seen Mayo do that and lose. I've seen Kerry do that and lose.
But we've seen Mayo.
No, I mean Kerry, not the recent Kerry team. Better, I mean Kerry back in like
closer than any 2011, other team, 2012. And certainly closer than any defensive team.
There's a fact that there's some teams that you need breaks to go your way. Like that's Mayo just didn't happen for them. And that's like, so whatever Tyrone do, they're going to need breaks to go their way. But I genuinely believe that if they were to, like, what you become then is you become like this, like Limerick were against Galway in the hurling, like this massive, hungry kind of half four line, when you see like four or five players descend on Jack McCaffrey there as opposed to waiting for him to carry it to you and holding them back there. Because all Tyrone need, really, like anyone who's watched Dublin this year will tell you, they only need three man markers, because the rest of the Dublin team, when the ball's turned over, will come back. They will. So what they need is Hampsey, McKernan, and one other player to stay up with Rock, Conn, and then in the other corner with probably Mannion. And even Mannion still will come back. Like you still have if you had trust those three players and the rest of the players push high and force it to, like, what we keep mentioning, and it's the buzzword of this podcast, is the turnovers. Imagine if you could turn over Dublin inside their own half. Like, imagine the consternation that would cause and the buzz that would give a crowd. Like, Tyrone have the capability to do that. Tyrone are capable of being the saviours of Gaelic football.
It's definitely interesting. Even Dag against myself, like, for example, we've seen Kerry try that in the, like, this at the beginning of this Dublin run of All Ireland's and fail. But like, that was because you also had a team where you do that and the ball gets popped over the top to Kevin McMenamin and he runs 45 metres and sticks the ball in the net, which we're touched on now that they don't do anymore. They're not going to be kicking that long ball in. They might have if they're forced to do it, they could well be able to resort
and
to that.
It would be good to see, and then Tyrone need a plan B as well, though, if they go with this. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the most important thing, no matter what they do, is that they're able to adapt within the game, because they could try your way, Mark, and it might not go well, and they could end up 6 points down, and then what do they do? You know?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, by doing it closer to goal, you have
safety net.
You have you have got an extra. I don't know how many players you'd give. How many players is the equivalent of the end line? Like, they can't go over you when you're doing it inside the 45. They can go over you when you're doing it out around the middle third. Or they can pick a hole. They can drag you left and right, or drag you backwards, drag you forwards. They can only drag you forwards and drag you left or right inside the 45.
We're way over. You two could argue about this for ages, and I'll pop in with the odd little uninformed pop. But we only have time to do our little All-Ireland quiz.
Oh.
McGovern has it inside to the substitute. This could win it for Leitrim. It's kicked in. Leitrim leads. Leitrim have taken the lead in Gaelic Park in New York. Noel Duncan has kicked it over the bar. And Leitrim, who were dead and buried, every 8 seconds, Leitrim lead by a point. And Leitrim, it looks like they have survived by the skin of their teeth. It's all over. It's all over. Leitrim have survived by the skin of their teeth.
Right, so all that's left is for our quiz, which this week, as I said, on possibly to try and help Tyrone a little bit, let's be honest, we're going to dismiss them completely and do something where we talk about the beaten finalists, those forgotten in All-Ireland finals. I've got three questions each, lads, from three decades, the 1990s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. One question each. I've got them divided up by one and two, but not by person. So who wants to go first?
Don't do not at me. Right. Morris go first.
Morris will go first. So, okay, Morris, you're getting the one questions. Nice and easy to start off with. Who were the beaten finalists in 1990? Beaten All-Ireland football finalists.
5 years before I was born.
Yeah, but sure. Look, I know them back to the 60s.
History's so. History.
We can't have too long here now with these. There's an imaginary shot clock in my head.
Dublin?
Mark, for a bonus point.
The year I was born. Cork won it, yes. They beat, I think, either Down or Meath. I'm going to say Down.
Meath.
Ah!
Should know them. All right. Okay. So, Mark, nil all here. You didn't get the bonus on what I thought. What I thought was an easy question, but I am older than you two. 1994, who were the beaten finalists?
Dublin.
Damn it.
Correct.
Damn it. That was an easier question.
I'm not sure why it's easier, but there you go. They were just two All-Ireland finals 4 years apart. But Mark goes one up. On to round two. This is the poor Mayo round. Circa yes. the 2000s.
Circa 1953 to 2000s. Oh, so was it 53? It was, yeah.
We're going with their middle run of poor All-Ireland look, and that was 2004 and 2006. So, Morris, name one of Mayo's two goal scorers in the 2004 All-Ireland rout to Kerry. That game was 120-29.
Oh, I want to say Mortimer. Oh, that's so hard.
Two goal scorers in that game.
I'm going to talk on this.
It's in my head. Don't worry. There'll be a random
I'm gonna say
countdown.
Conor Mortimer.
No, that's wrong, I'm afraid. Conor Mortimer missed an absolutely golden chance in that game where he kicked over the bar. Mark?
I think Andy Moran came on in this game or started and had a great... I'm trying to remember if that was the right one. Was it 2004 or 2006? But it was one of them when Moran was in his first season and I think he scored a goal. And I'm going to doubt myself and I'm going to say someone like Trevor Mortimer. And it's probably going to be Andy Moran. So I'm going to go, I'll stick with Andy Moran.
Wrong.
Don't tell me Trevor Mortimer got a goal.
Trevor Mortimer didn't score a goal. Trevor Mortimer had a shot brilliantly saved by Dermot Murphy, which Mickey Conroy
Kevin?
Put in. And Alan Dillon scored a goal in the first few minutes of the game when Mayo thought they were going to win the All-Ireland. No. Unfortunately, they didn't.
Kenneth. Sorry. Never mind.
2006. Two goal scorers in this.
Andy Moran.
4-15-3-5. Andy Moran.
That's going to be wrong, isn't
Andy
it?
Andy Moran's wrong.
Ah, crap.
So, two goal scorers, a little bit of a clue there, but the score was 4-15-3-5.
Kieran McDonald?
No.
In the top corner?
No.
Conor Mortimer probably got two goals in this one.
He didn't. Kevin O'Neill and Pat Hart. Kevin O'Neill got two goals.
Kevin O'Neill, I was trying to think of actually for the 2004 one. So I couldn't remember his name.
That was terrible, lads. I'm not ashamed to say that. As I said, the whole premise of this quiz was nobody remembers the beaten finals.
We don't.
The only ones we remember so far were the Dublin team losing in the rain because Charlie Redmond missed the penalty.
So I'm winning 1-0 as it stands.
1-0 going into
what
the
did? Oh, yeah, you got a point.
Yeah.
This one is the 2010 and we're going with margin of defeat. Morris, 2010 All Ireland final. Cork beat down by how much?
4 points.
Mark, this is exact. Now, this isn't a tie break, so you have to get it right or wrong. You're wrong, by the way. Sorry, I should have said. I was taking it as a tie break. You got that wrong.
1 point.
1 point.
115-16, isn't it?
2-0. Which means that Morris has to get the super double point bonus in this.
That's one. Made up.
It's not. You just got his one right, so I'm not sure if that's possible. I'm giving it to him anyway. 2014, how much did Donegal lose by?
2014. 3 points?
3 points is correct. It's a 3-0 win.
Yes. Yes, lads.
I can't believe Morris got to the All-Ireland final. He was dominating all year.
And then got to the All-Ireland final and bottled it. Choked.
Yeah.
Choked.
Absolutely.
Big time.
Blew a 3-0 defeat. Like Manchester United at home. Okay.
I've won.
This whole podcast has been a sham, but we've got as far as the All-Ireland final. And we'll have to come back again next week anyway to tell you how it went.
Exactly.
Are you going to enjoy the game despite this travesty of you being absolutely hammered by 3-0 plus the tiebreaker in the quiz?
I hope so. I'm a bit like Mayo, like
going to turn up anyway.
I hope I will enjoy it as long as Tyrone adopt my approach and not Mark's.
For that approach, you're going to have to tune in to the so-called Weaker Podcast, available on Balls.ie podcast feeds on all good podcast apps.
Thanks for that, Mark.
No problem.
We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the match.
Take it easy.